I want to talk about something this morning that is not much discussed in the media for fairly obvious reasons. When I come to it, you'll know why. But actually is central to the Torah. And when we read the portion this morning, we see just how central it is. In some ways, we know a great deal about Moses, and in other ways, we know very little. We don't know, for example, what Moses looked like. And we don't know what his qualities were as a human being, except from his actions. But there is one description of the qualities of Moshe, the one quality that is singled out. What is it that the Torah decides is most important to say about this person who is, after all, the central figure of our history? It doesn't comment on his intelligence, his devotion, his passion, his love for the law, his love for God, his love for the Jewish people. You can see all that through the Torah. But the Torah decides to take a step back and say the following. This man Moses, anav ma'od mikol adam asher ba'adama, al pnei ha'adama, that this man Moses is the most humble man of any man in the world. And when I read that this morning, I began to think, when was the last time that I heard a public figure praised for their humility? And I realized that not only do you not hear people praised for their humility, but you hear the opposite. You are supposed to put yourself out there, you're supposed to have self-esteem, you're supposed to think well of yourself, you're supposed to know that I'm okay and you're okay, and you're supposed to look out for number one. Nobody says, be humble. In fact, humility seems counterproductive, because after all, if you're humble, people might not notice you. They might not give you what you want. When you go into a job interview, nobody says, okay, now be humble. When we talk about modesty, the word that modifies modesty in our society is false modesty. As the pitcher Dizzy Dean said a long time ago, if it's true, it isn't bragging. As long as I know I'm great, I have to tell you I'm great, otherwise I'm being dishonest and falsely modest. And we do have, there's part of us that responds to hubris, to pride, to even exaggerated self-esteem. Does it endear you or distance you from the great economist Joseph Schumpeter if I tell you that towards the end of his life, he told a class of students that when he started out, he wanted to become the greatest economist, the greatest lover, and the greatest horseman in the world. And then he paused for a minute and said, but things didn't work out so well with the horses. That idea, the idea that because he is gifted, he can be arrogant, is an idea that we have transferred to our young. Everybody has to have their own web page that proclaims how wonderful they are, how great they are, how gifted they are, how cool they are, all the things they like, which you should like too, and you should be interested in what they like, because after all, by the age of 13, who doesn't have highly developed taste? There's no humility in this. There's no recognition of where they are in life's journey. There's no realization that one day, when life has dealt them a few blows, they will look back on what they wrote at 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 and be ashamed. Anyone who isn't ashamed of some of the things that they said at 12, 13, 14, and 15 never grew up. But in today's society, you don't only say those things, to your classmates, to your parents, to your brothers and sisters. You say them to the world. The hubris of youth is now put out on the internet to stay forever. The cruelties, the callousness, the indifference, the strutting, it never goes away. And as a society, we encourage it. We don't discourage it. We don't tell our children, don't say that about yourself. It's immodest. You're not that great. No one's that great at your age. And very few are that great older. But a prerequisite for being that great is not thinking you're that great. Look at Moses. When the Torah wants to identify his greatness, what does it say? Moses thought he wasn't great. And this brings us to the NBA Finals. I know that it is a syndrome of age to say that everything was better when you were young. But sports were better when I was young. And not only because I don't pay attention to them today, but because the heroes of sports were heroes in part because they were thought of as admirable human beings. And the day we found out they were not admirable human beings, they ceased to be heroes. Why was Lou Gehrig a hero? Because of that speech he gave where he said, "I'm the luckiest man alive," as he was dying of what is today called Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. Because he was humble, because he was modest, because he was grateful. Because had he been a football player, he was a man who never would have spiked the ball in the end zone and done a dance to humiliate his opponents. Because that is unhumble. It's arrogant. It's wrong. Because when you look at sports heroes today, they may be gifted, but of the many, many descriptions that you have read of Kobe Bryant, have you ever heard humble as a characteristic? And if not, then you wonder to what extent are we worshiping people for skills instead of character? And what does that do to our children and to us? When it doesn't matter what kind of person someone is, as long as they can throw a ball through a hoop or run faster than the person next to them or hit a 90-mile-per-hour fastball. We don't make the disconnect. Yes, you can admire him for his skills, but he's not a hero. A hero requires some recognition of limitations, some admissions of fault, some humility, some willingness to learn from others, some admission that you need to grow. That doesn't preclude your recognition of your own gifts. The rabbis asked, why did God give the Torah on Sinai? It's, after all, a very small mountain. There were lots of bigger mountains around. And they answer, because of modesty, the same reason that God appeared at the burning bush. God wanted to show that in humility there is God. So the Kotzker Rebbe comes along later and he says, okay, if God wanted to show humility, why didn't God give the Torah in a valley? Why give it in a mountain at all? And his answer is that humility only counts if you're a mountain. That you have to have something to be humble about in order for your humility to be real. And it's when you do something that counts in this world and you're still humble that you're really humble. So it isn't that you can't think of yourself as an image of God, that you can't think of yourself as someone who contributes to the world. But really, who among us has the right to be arrogant? When Moses is the most humble man who ever walked on the face of the earth. It's a quality we respond to even though we don't know it. You feel it in politics, in sports, in business. You have a sense of someone else's character and whether it is blown up from the inside or whether they recognize, as in the old Jewish joke, of the three scholars who are beating their breasts on Yom Kippur and crying out, "I'm nothing." And a little guy in the back sees that's what they're doing. He figures that's what he should do. So he starts beating his breast and saying, "I'm nothing, I'm nothing." And one of the scholars nudges the other and goes, "Look, look who thinks he's nothing." In other words, there's a real humility and a false humility. There's someone who says, "I'm not worthy of this," and doesn't really believe it. And someone who says, "I'm not worthy of this," and thinks of everyone else who, in fact, is worthier than they. Now I want to tell you why it is, I believe, that humility has been expelled from our society. It's because what I said in the beginning of this talk is true. Humility often doesn't get you what you want. If you're going for that job and you're humble, you may not get it. But you see, what you get is much less important than what you are. And what you get will pass, but what you are stays with you forever. And you have to decide in this life, is it going to be about what you accumulate or about the condition of your soul? That's why Moses, in the Torah, when God tells him he can't get into the land of Israel, he says, "Please, can't I go in?" And God says, "No." And that's it. Moses doesn't build a resume. He doesn't say in the Torah, "How can you say no to me and let these schleppers in? After all, look, they didn't do anything compared to what I did." If Moses had been a decent advocate, maybe he would have gotten into the land of Israel. But he wouldn't have been Moses. He was humble. He accepted God's verdict. He was anav mikol adam. He was the most humble human being alive because he had the most cause to be the most arrogant human being alive. He was a little bit in the position of Winston Churchill, who said once, "I believe all men are worms, but I also believe I'm a glowworm." He knew his gifts, but he also knew his limitations. Let me read you a beautiful comment from the Testament of Yudah Asheri. This is what he left for his children, part of what we call an ethical will. He quotes a sage who said, "I never met a man in whom I failed to recognize something superior to myself. If he was older, I said he had done more good than I. If younger, I said I had sinned more. If richer, I said he was more charitable. If poorer, I said he suffered more. If wiser, I honored his wisdom. And if not wiser, I judged his faults more lightly." There is no one from whom we cannot learn. After all, if Moses did, so can we. The way to greatness isn't to proclaim, but to work, to achieve, to care, and to recognize that we should not take credit for it because, after all, that's what we were put here to do. That's what we were put here to do. In our public discourse, for our children, for ourselves, this is an ideal that is worth resurrecting in the Jewish community. It doesn't mean that you have to degrade yourself or belittle yourself, or disregard your needs. It means that you have to recognize that there is no indispensable person, and that gifts are distributed all across God's creation, and that humility is a recognition that everyone else has a place in the world too. It is the one quality that the Torah chooses to specify about the greatest man who ever lived, Anav Mikol Adam. It's not just that Moses felt humble in the face of God, but Moses felt humble in the face of other human beings. Because, after all, each human being is a unique image of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, is a unique image of God in this world. If we can remember that, then we will think well of ourselves, but well of others too. We'll recognize that when someone is arrogant, they need to learn humility. That when someone is humble, we need to learn it from them. And maybe we can educate our children about what it is to be good and what it is to be great, what it is to be a hero. And if for a moment you lose your compass and you forget, turn back to Baha'alotcha and learn again from Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher. Shabbat Shalom.